to be the introducer at this luncheon talk, which raises the question, who's he mad at? Me, you, or Bill McClay? I know most of you who've gone to these Philadelphia Society meetings are used to having a Stan Evans or a Joe Morris give you a stand-up act that's worthy of Jay Leno. Lump it. This is all I got to you. I am to humor what John Kerry is to charisma, what George Bush is to elocution, and what Teddy Kennedy is to self-denial. I did want to say a word or two on the theme of the conference, because having had our recent visit to Claremont and heard Harry Jaffa's view and our various friends from the Claremont Graduate School's views on the issues here, it seemed appropriate to me to bring up somebody else, somebody a little more dead. I should have a really good joke to follow up on that. But remember what I just said, so you'll just have to lump it. Because I just wanted to bring up Edmund Burke, as I always do at these sorts of things. I have my own reputation to live down. Because Burke, after all, the founder of modern conservatism, also wrote one of the earliest tracts on slavery. Burke's Sketch of a Negro Code, it seems to me, is one of the most important documents on the issue of race that we could be talking about. Why do I say that? Because Burke did not examine slavery as a relationship between the individual and the mode of production. He recognized what I think we all need to recognize, that slavery, unfortunately, is nothing new. A serf was, after all, a slave. That's even what the word serf means. There was something particularly abominable about the practice of slavery, particularly racially classified slavery. But again, it wasn't merely the relationship between the individual and the mode of production. It had to do with very basic violations of natural law. And Burke's code sought not merely to make a legal pronouncement which would somehow change the world. Burke understood that law is among the last and among the least effective means of ordering a society. Burke's code, a law after all, aimed rather to reestablish a basic understanding of what is required of human dignity. And that has to do with the most fundamental institutions of life, family, church, and local association. Burke said he wanted rid of slavery, the sooner the better. But in the meantime, what do? We see to it that those who are put in positions of power and authority abide by the natural law. They no longer sell husbands off from their wives, stud out the males, forbid religious instruction, destroy the local institutions of life that make it worth living. Of course, in the process of seeing to it that these rights, natural rights, the real rights of man, are respected, you make chattel slavery impossible. You make it unprofitable, and it ends up dying out. That's not how things turned out, but I think it's important to focus on what Burke saw as the real issue here. Recognition, not merely of individuality, as important as that is, but individuality within sociability, within the locality. And I hope that as we look at the importance of fairness, we don't allow a focus on constitutional legal decisions to blind us to the natural desire for belonging, the quest for community that is within every one of our hearts, regardless of the past that we actually have to live with. It's in the formation of concrete, lived history that all Americans can have an identity that both identifies them with America and gives them something more organic and concrete to make their lives whole. It was in the 19th century that the United States not only practiced chattel slavery, but delegitimized the powers of the localities. There's a long argument about how freedom grew in the West from the chartered rights of townships, whether in Italy or in England or in Germany. The rights that these towns managed to carve out for themselves from the central authority allowed for the growth of freedoms, participatory freedoms, where you could be a part of a community that was functioning. You could have your own even legal system. And as Robert Nisbet points out, it was that multiplication of spheres of authority, the fact that you could go to a local court, not merely the king's court or a canon court, you had many places to look to for authority, that brought out the growth of human dignity and its recognition in rights, most particularly the right of due process. So I hope that we'll see that even if we need to look to changes, for example, in our constitutional law, we won't confuse ourselves in looking for a good life coming from Washington, D.C., or as I prefer to think of it, the Imperial City. A good life has to be built in Philadelphia, in Scranton, or God help us all, Ann Arbor, Michigan. We simply don't have any other option because that's where we lead our lives. So, thank you for your patience. I'm sorry for no punchlines. And now, on to the guy you actually wanted to hear from. I could have actually dispensed with all that and simply read from the official biography of our speaker, and it would have taken up the bulk of my 10 minutes. Because at a fairly tender age, he has accomplished so much that it would take most of his time, as well as mine, to recite it all. He is the SunTrust Chair in Excellence in the Humanities at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, also a professor of history there. He has a number of other appellations as well, though, with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the Princeton University's Madison Program, and with the National Council on the Humanities, the advisory board for the National Endowment for the Humanities. His book, The Masterless, Self and Society in Modern America, won the 1995 Merle Curtis Award of the Organization of American Historians for the best book in American intellectual history. Among his other books, ISI has published The Student's Guide to United States History and Religion Returns to the Public Square, Faith and Policy in America. I think more people, however, know him from his frequent contributions to such journals as First Things, Wilson Quarterly, Commentary. He's all over the place. So it is with a great deal of pleasure and a fair amount of envy that I introduce to you Professor Wilfred MacLay.